Hi, I'm Bonnie Landry, and welcome to Make Joy Normal. With my co-hosts, Celia Smith and Christina, and the guests we have on our show, we would like to share the opportunity to walk with you. We're so grateful for all the listeners and for all the questions and the comments that we get on our show. We're just so thankful that you are tuning in and you have a desire to make joy normal in your own life. As part of your daily walk, we hope that we can support you in this. We ask that if this has been valuable to you, that you share, like, or leave us a review. That's how we get the word out so that we can help others make joy normal too. Okay, good afternoon to all my listeners. I am going to introduce you to a guest of mine shortly, but I will just give her a quick welcome here. Welcome, Amber. I'm so glad you joined us.
Yes, thank you. I'm excited. Thanks.
Me too. Amber and I are going to be talking today about home birth. I'm sure we'll talk about a lot of stuff, but home birth was kind of our topic of choice. And I'll kind of get into why in a moment. I'll just open with a prayer, and then we can kind of get into maybe a little bit about you and who you are and why you're here. So in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, amen. Heavenly Father, just ask that you bless this conversation between Amber and myself, that you allow us to be a conduit for your love, for your grace, for information for those who need it, and support for those who need it as well. So we just ask all of this in your name. We ask for the intercession of St. Thomas Aquinas, pray for us. St. Philip Neri, pray for us. And our Mother of Good Counsel, pray for us. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. So I just discovered a couple of things about you. I was kind of reading through your stuff, and you're a convert. Yes. Is that recent?
Yeah, last Easter.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'm a convert as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but a long time now, 31 years.
Oh, wow.
Something. Yeah, a long time. So what motivated that? Do you mind me asking?
Yeah, I actually just interviewed with our local diocese about it.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was, I'm like a big seeker type. I've always been one to really want to understand and know what's true about anything, you know, spiritual or otherwise. And after trying a lot of different streams of Christianity, I just, it's where I landed. My husband did grow up Catholic. And so it was a lot of little things, but I remember one day just realizing that most authors that I like, I'm a big reader, were Catholic. I just was like, oh, Merton. Oh, you know, it just kind of clicked together. And then that was like a little doorway to considering Catholicism. And then there were other little things as well, you know, so it was a journey for sure.
Right. I'm always so impressed with people who's like my conversion, I became Catholic because my husband was Catholic and then I grew into it, but it was really quite thoughtless. You know, I wasn't a Christian, had no reference point.
Okay.
You know, if he'd been Baptist, I'd have been Baptist, right?
Yeah, interesting.
But then, of course, you grow and you learn as you're in it. So those first few years, but there was no sort of academic or theological reasons that brought me into the church.
Okay.
You know, but, you know, it doesn't matter in the end, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Another thing that really drew me to Catholicism was feeling like motherhood and womanhood was really deeply honored, you know, in like a, not like a cheesy kind of way, but just in this deep way. Like are you familiar with Abigail Favale at all?
No.
Oh, she's amazing. She's a convert as well. And I just read her conversion memoir, and her experience is so similar to mine. She says, what I was looking for in feminism, I found in Catholicism.
Yeah.
And that's like exactly.
Oh, that sends chills down my spine.
I know.
It's so true.
It's exactly how I feel. So that was like a big part of it, feeling like, wow, I see motherhood and womanhood honored like in this way that I have felt since becoming a mother, but have not seen or felt from any other faith denomination, nor do I feel it in culture. And it felt like that. So that was one big piece of it for me, I guess. And, you know, my account on Instagram is about womanhood and motherhood, kind of just trying to push counter narratives to the mainstream feminist narratives.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to say that too, because that has been a big thing too.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love it. And your Instagram is great. I was going to tell my listeners about that in a minute, because there's one particular quote that really leapt out at me. But if you could first tell us a little bit about you and your family, that would be great. So we can get to hear you a little.
Yeah, absolutely. So I live here in the Midwest in the United States. I don't know how big your audiences are.
It's mostly American, actually. So that's about probably 80% American, which I find quite interesting. Okay. But yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So we live in South Dakota. Right. This is where I grew up. And my husband, Ryan, is an engineer and he's from Minnesota. Okay. So not too far away.
Nice.
And we have three girls, Alice and Claire and Rose.
Beautiful.
And they are, Alice will be 8, which is crazy. Can't believe that, you know, I'm like, that's not okay.
I know.
But it's wild. Yeah. So she'll be 8 in June and then Claire just turned 6 and then Rose is 2.5.
Nice.
And I used to be a middle school English teacher.
Okay.
That was my career. Before staying home with my kids, I decided to be home with my kids, at least in the early years. Yeah. And then I kind of started to do some writing, while I was at home with my kids, at first just on a little blog. And then I started to do some freelancing and yeah. And so that's still basically what I do. I'm mother and I write.
Oh, that's so awesome. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had 3 girls first as well.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And then 3 boys and then a daughter. But yeah,
wow.
It was, yeah. I thought I was always going to be a girl mom. And then suddenly there was all these boys. I was like, oh, okay.
Well, interesting. We're trying to decide if we should stop or if we should carry on. And it's very hard. It's a very, we turned 40 last summer, both my husband and I turned 40 last summer. And yeah, it's a very hard thing. We are trying to discern at the moment. We both want more, but we're also very tired, you know? So it's tricky.
It's harder. So. You know, the older you get, the harder that is, right? I mean, I think every mom with small children is tired, right? I mean, that's a reality of life.
Yeah.
But it's hard to kind of know, you know, what do we do now, right? I know after my 6th, we had, actually stepping into the home birth topic, but after my 6th, which was, he was the first one that I actually had at home. And my husband was saying through the, I had a really, really hard pregnancy. And he was saying I was 40, just about, yeah, I was 40. And he said, you know, I don't know if we should be doing this again. It's so hard on you. I don't know if we should be doing this again. And then we had this home birth and it was so beautiful. And I had always wanted a home birth. So, so he was, oh my gosh, we have to do that again.
Oh, I love that.
So beautiful. So first of all, I wanted to kind of provide some context for the listeners. The reason why I wanted to talk about home birth on the podcast was because there's a lot of overlap between people who choose to home educate and people who choose to birth at home. And I think it's driven from many times from the same place, a desire to have agency, to have control, to have say in the decisions that you make in your child's education, in the way you birth, in the way that you, you know, the way that you eat, the way you take care of your own health. You know, there's a lot of alternative options that homeschoolers exercise. And I think sometimes that just happens, like, because I'm that person who wants to, you know, figure it out what is right for me, or that you start doing one thing and you think, hey, if I can have agency over this, there's other areas of my life that I need to look to. So the context in my own personal life was my first marriage, my first daughter was born. I had no idea people even had home births or whatever. Had a great birth in the hospital. And then my husband and I got married when she was 3. And I, at that point, was saying, you know, I really, really would like to have a home birth. So I didn't. My first 5 were all born in the hospital. My husband was not okay with home birth. And there was not a college of midwives at that time. So it was sort of an illegal. And he was uncomfortable with the fact that there wasn't jurisdiction. I was not uncomfortable with that. But I also felt really strongly that we have to be on the same page because, you know, and it wasn't the hill I was going to die on. Right. And I had a good birth in the hospital. So the rest of my births, I had fantastic hospital births, but then we moved into another community. And by this time, the College of Midwives had been established for a few years. And we had to switch from the wonderful doctor that I had to midwives here. And he was so impressed with them that he said, you know, I think I could be open to this. Right. And he said, I know you've waited a long time for that. And I didn't know if I was ever going to be okay with it, but these ladies just instilled confidence in me. And you know, that would be, so I was really thrilled, right? So that was my story. Yeah. So I had, you know, these great births in the hospital, and so nice because you didn't have to worry about what your kids were doing and all that. It was just so easy, right? I had really fast labor. So it was like, there's no kind of freaking out, like, you gotta go now. So yeah, all that was taken out of it. So that was really beautiful for me. And that was kind of my story. So I just want to put that in context because I hadn't had all home births and whatnot. One of the things that I think is worthwhile talking about home birth and worthwhile bringing it up, especially for those who maybe are nervous, skeptical, worried, you know, whatever it is that you would hold you back, you know, because I think we have to be clear, home birth is not the way. It is a way, and there are many ways. And so the bottom line is so that the choosing is important. But I think if a person can't home birth or doesn't want to home birth, you have at least that education about what home birth is, what a midwife assisted birth is, all of those things, education about birth in general, right? So I was wondering if you would maybe sort of, tell us about your birth experiences and your birth stories and, so that we know where you're coming from.
Yeah, I will try not to talk too long because I'm a big birth nerd, as they say. So let me try to summarize. So I had two hospital births and then only had my third was a home birth.
Okay.
It's funny. I actually dove into the birth world and was familiar with home birth and actually loved the idea of it when I was pregnant with my first, even maybe before I was pregnant, when we were just trying to get pregnant. Right. I watched the Ricky Lake documentary, you know, that's like the gateway for everybody.
Oh, but
wasn't for you, maybe. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Oh, it's called The Business of Being Born.
Oh, okay. I heard the title for sure. I'm not watching.
So I feel like for a lot of people, at least my age and maybe younger, that's kind of like what opens the door to just learning how over-medicalized birth has become and understanding that home is an option and things like that. So I watched the documentary early on. I read all the birth books, et cetera, but I wasn't open to home birth at the time. You know, this was eight years ago or so. I didn't think it was for me. I felt like maybe next time, not with my first though. I have never done this before. I'm very control freak kind of personality. I was like, maybe down the line, but I don't think that's for me right away. But I did have midwives, hospital midwives.
Okay.
Because I did want a midwife. I believe in midwifery for healthy pregnancies, just based on my own self-education. So it was a hospital birth with a midwife team, and it was okay. I had a doula, which was very helpful, and it was okay. But there were a few less than ideal experiences, looking back. But overall, I came away feeling empowered. It was exhausting, but I felt like I was mostly respected during the process. My doula was amazing. I came away feeling strong, feeling like I did that. So I would say overall. Overall, it was good, especially for, you know, it being my first time. And then we relocated when I was pregnant with my second to where we live now, which is a rural area in South Dakota where I grew up.
Right.
And there are no midwives here, except home birth midwives. There are no, you know, hospital midwives.
Right.
And I was underneath the care of a midwife from, you know, in the place where we moved from when I was pregnant with my second. And she said to me very strongly, she said, because I could drive an hour where we live now, there's a hospital midwife teams an hour away.
Right.
She said, I wouldn't do an hour drive with a second baby. She said in one of my appointments, I think just insinuating they can come fast or, you know, and I was like, oh, so I kind of just in my mind, I was like, okay, well, that's not an option. Then when we moved here, my brother is a PA and he said, there's a really good OB. He's in private practice. I think you should talk to him. He's pretty natural minded. My brother knows, you know, we're, you know, intentional about things like that. And he's pretty natural minded. And so I went in and met with him and I said, okay, fine. I mean, he seems good. He seems fine. He's in private practice. I felt good about that. So he would deliver my baby, you know, it wasn't this, you know, it seemed good. And I will try not to cry when I talk about this, but I had, a unnecessary C-section with him I went in, I was about 40, I think I was right around 41 weeks. I tend to go over, yeah. I tend to go closer to 42 weeks. And he didn't, it just went in, left my toddler at home with my grandma, just went in by myself. My husband wasn't there. He never came with me to appointments. I was fine with it. And he didn't like the heart tones. He said, I don't like these heart tones. I'm going to have you go to another room. And he put the monitor on me and was like, he left, and then the nurse was there, and I could just kind of tell from the vibes that this was not going to go well. He came back in and he said, I don't like these heart tones. We're going to go to the OR. I wasn't in labor at all. I was not in labor at all. And he was basically like, I don't remember how he said it, but it was like, we're going to the OR, and his clinic is attached to the hospital. So they just, I remember I wasn't moving fast enough. So they like got a wheelchair, and it was terrible. And it wasn't emergency. They didn't put me under general or anything. They still just like took me to the room and whatever. And then at that point, my husband came, and the heart rate seemed to be going back up. And anyway, to make a long story short, it was super traumatic. Super disempowering on many levels. I was totally in shock. It was, and we had just moved here, so our life was kind of unstable anyway. And it was terrible. I ended up having really bad postpartum anxiety, and it was just, it was like a nightmare. It was like a literal nightmare.
Yeah.
So that happened. That was my second birth.
Did he ever give you an explanation about, you know, why, what he didn't like about the heart tones, what he thought might be going on, if there was actually anything going on?
No, he didn't. I remember coming out of my recovery room, and because he had said, oh, we're going to send the placenta. So there was nothing wrong with her. She had an Apgar was it the Apgar? Is that the score? Whatever the score is of like 9.5 or something. Perfectly healthy. Right. The cord was not wrapped at all. He said he was going to send the placenta in to see if there was anything to do with that. So I remember asking him at the desk. I was out walking. I was like, oh, did you get the placenta results back? You know, I was just curious, you know, was there anything that was wrong? And he's like, no. Yeah, we got him back. No, there was nothing wrong. And I was like, okay. So no, he never gave me any explanation. I've come to know that he's just a very conservative doctor. And though he is natural minded in some ways, he has the highest C-section rate in this entire town. he's a really good surgeon. And in his defense, I think he thought he was doing the right thing. I don't think he was trying to make more money or whatever. He just is a surgeon who has had babies born still. So he's not a bad man, and I don't blame him, but you know, when we engage with.
But you felt like something was taken out.
Oh, definitely. Kind of definitely. And there's nothing wrong with a C-section if it's necessary, of course, but I felt like I was like scared into it basically. And I really didn't feel like I had a choice. He was like, I mean, it was like, let's go, we're going. And I wasn't even in labor. I had just told my 20-month-old, like, I'll be back in a half an hour. And then I was getting surgery, having my baby taken out. It was wild and it was really hard. And then, with my third, it was during the pandemic. It was late 2020 when I got pregnant. Right. And because of the experience we had with Claire, and my husband was totally on board with home birth, and because of, I think, the way the world was, and we were hearing, oh, women are having to wear masks during labor, and sometimes if you test positive for COVID, you can't hold your baby. And I was like, it's a no for me. All of that is a no for me. I just felt this super strong sense that I'm going to at least look into home birth. And so I figured out we have two home birth midwives that serve this area, and I talked with her, and it was pretty much just, it was a yes, a hard yes. I just felt so comfortable with her. I felt like I'm definitely not going to give birth in this town again. There are no midwives. And I prayed about it, and I just felt a huge sense of peace. And I felt like this is totally right for me. This is totally, my husband was totally on board. That it was amazing. It was a what they call an HBAC, a home birth after cesarean. But it had been a couple of years, you know, so it was, I felt like it was safe. We also live very close to the hospital here. So something that made me also feel a bit safe. It's not like we were an hour drive from a hospital or something. And I did a lot of mental work Yeah. I listened to the Christian hypnobirthing app, which is amazing. It's sort of just these tracks about trusting God, trusting the way God designed your body, like all this stuff. I listened to those as I fell asleep, and I just did a lot of like inner work so as to not be anxious and so as to trust my body, trust my midwife. And it was just the most beautiful, empowering experience. It was just, it's like I'm a writer and I feel like I have no words. It was amazing. Amazing. She was born in the water in our living room. Beautiful.
It's an amazing thing, I think, because birth affects us so deeply. You know, I remember when I was pregnant with my first, and you know, people tell you, everyone wants to tell you their horror story. And I hate that. And so because I had really great births, I told people my birth story all the time because I thought, I just want to give them the other side of the story, is that lots of births are awesome too. And there's things that you can do to increase the chances of an awesome birth and all of that. But I just told the stories because they were fun and beautiful and pleasant and, you know,
that's awesome.
But I remember my first birth, I was expecting it to be much, you know, for lack of a better word, worse than what I actually experienced, right? What I experienced was a pretty short labor. You know, it was pretty intense near the end. But they didn't think I was anywhere near giving birth when I actually did. And they said, you know, I said, oh, I have to get up and go to the bathroom. They said, okay, well, we'll just check, you know, to see if where you're dilated. Cause sometimes you can feel pushy like that when you're ready to give birth. And they said, oh, baby crowning. I was like, oh, right. So, I mean, it was one of those, like, cool. I thought I had hours to go. I thought, you know, it was just a cool experience and they were all, you know, really beautiful births. And I remember going home and feeling like Superwoman, right? And not, you know, I felt blessed, first of all, because not everybody has an easy time, right? Not everybody, some births are harder than others. It's not always, you know, as straightforward as I felt like my first birth was. Lots of times it is, though, right? Lots of times it is. And it was just one of those things that I thought, I did something. I brought a life into the world and somebody needs to give me a medal. Right. And 100%. I mean, I suddenly had this respect for women for millennia, thinking, wow, ladies, thank you for, you know, inviting me into this club, because I feel so, so proud and happy and excited about doing this, right? About having this experience, right? And I mean, I think that it just affects us. And I mean, I think even when a birth doesn't go the way you want, you can still have that experience, right? You can still have that experience.
Absolutely.
You know, I was in charge. I made the decisions that I wanted to make. I brought this life into the world. Yes. And you know, this is a beautiful thing. This is a beautiful thing that I'm capable of doing. And that's where, in my mind, the rubber meets the road and feminism. Yes. Like, look at the power we have, people. Why do you want to be like a man? Look what we can do.
Totally.
Right?
Totally. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I think what you just said is really important. I wrote about that a couple of years ago, that like there's kind of this idea in women's minds, I think, that in order to have a good birth or an empowering birth, it has to go a certain way. You know, you have to have this like fast or at least unmedicated, you know, birth with no problems. And it's like, no, that's not really what it's about, is the mother's experience. It's about whether supported, the mother feels respected, whether she feels like she had agency, supported. Yeah. It's not about it going a certain way. Unmedicated birth is amazing because you can really feel everything your body is up to. You know, I mean, there is something to say about that, but it's really about the mother's experience at the end of the day and whether or not she feels like she, had agency in the process and wasn't like belittled and disrespected and, you know, decisions made for her that she wasn't making.
So what is the thing that motivates you the most to kind of share your story, to kind of share, your research, your resources? What is the thing that keeps you motivated to do this?
That's interesting. I think it's really just I was in a very, I really identified with feminism for a lot of years. That was a big part of how I saw things. It was a big part of how I saw myself. And then
and define what you mean by that, just because there's different views on feminism.
Right, right. I guess just sort of like the mainstream American feminism that's in our culture, which is really second wave feminism. So the like working outside the home and, you know, and birth control and really the what you just said before, being empowered is becoming like a man is really sort of what undergirds the mainstream version of feminism in America, at least. And I wouldn't have ever thought those thoughts. I can only see that looking back. But just these ideas about motherhood, even motherhood being, something I want to do, but it's not something that like makes me strong. What I should focus on is my education, my career, you know, all of these things. Like, and when I became a mother, I feel like my feminist lens like shattered. And I thought, even like with birth, I thought, you know, so many women are having like birth trauma and the state of birth in this country is really not great overall. Maternal health is not like, where is feminism on that? You never hear feminist rhetoric or feminist, you know, talk about that, but most women become mothers. So why are we not talking more about motherhood and mothers? And so I just started to ask these questions. And I started to see that I just started to have holes poked in my worldview. And I still feel like a feminist. This is something I write about a lot. You know, I have in my Instagram bio, first wave feminist, which is like these women in the 1800s who were like totally did not denigrate motherhood or did not denigrate the family, but just, you know, wanted certain things that we, you know, voting rights, et cetera, you know, wanted a bit more dignity official for women officially in society, but you know, the abortion rights and the, just all the stuff that is so tied up with feminism. Now I have just seen through becoming a mother, I'm like, yeah, that's not it for me, but I do still feel like a feminist. Like you said, with birth, like women, I've learned through motherhood that women are incredible. Women have incredible capacity, power, things to offer that men do not have to offer. And I want to be a voice for that, almost like a feminist voice for mothers and a feminist voice for women, specifically women as women, not women as like, you know, trying to be men. Does that make sense?
Yeah, completely.
It's just been through my own experiences, mostly centered on motherhood, but also like marriage and things where I'm like, I want to encourage women in a specific way that I don't see women being encouraged. And even in the church, you know, I grew up Protestant, so I think I see this more in Catholicism, but you know, it sometimes feels like motherhood is kind of put up on this kind of syrupy kind of pedestal, you know, in the church, but not really, I don't know, respected as it should be, kind of like, oh, still cover up when you're breastfeeding and different things like that. And so that's not really, so I kind of feel like I have this unique advocacy I'm trying to do, which is not really Christian, but it sort of, it has Christian values, if that makes sense, you know, but it's not overly kind of flowery and kind of syrupy. Like I feel like sometimes motherhood is talked about.
We're women. We're tough. We got stuff.
I mean, exactly. You know, and so yeah, it's just that's the message I'm trying to put out there. And it just comes from my own lived experiences and wishing that someone had told me that instead of me having to discover it on my own. That like it's not like cringe or embarrassing to like stay home with your kids, for example. Like it's not, there's a very strong message in our culture that to be home with your kids is not something you do if you're like an educated, empowered woman.
Yeah.
That's not something you should obviously be working. Right. And it's kind of like, well, no, not necessarily. It's not, first of all, you don't have to stay home forever. You know, there's just these really oversimplified messages that I don't like, that I think are wrong and really damaging to women actually. And I'm trying to counter them. I'm trying to counter them.
Yeah. That's awesome. So in what ways, are you doing that? I know your Instagram is great, but you have other sort of avenues that you're using. So do you want to sort of tell my listeners a bit about what you're doing so they can?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I consider my kids and my home my first priority. So I'm always trying to work it in the margins. You know, I'm getting a bit better about making time for this because it is important to me. And I think it's important in general.
You know what I think too, is that like, I've always, you know, been a speaker and been an advocate for homeschooling and various other things throughout my mothering years.
I love that.
And I think that what was really, really important to me during that, and I would encourage you to, you know, continue to do what you're doing because I felt it kept my ideals really, really clear. Mm. So it was as much for me as it was for other people that I want to be really, really clear about what it is I want out of this life. Mm. And I want to always be moving forward and learning and growing. And one of the ways that I do that is as a speaker, as a blogger, you know, and, you know, now as a podcaster, that I'm doing that and I'm saying the things because it reinforces for me what it is I want. And sometimes also just examine, okay, am I on the right track? Am I doing the right thing? Is there new information that I need to consider? Mm. Right. So it's really good. It's good for us as people.
Yeah.
Right?
I love that. Yeah. Thank you. And I feel like I can use still 8 years in, actually was just before I hopped on here. I'm writing a blog post about this so let me answer your question before I go there. So I write on Instagram, at Radical Homemaker. And then I also started a Substack, about a year ago. Are you familiar with Substack?
Okay. I mean, I know the name. I assume it's sort of like a blogging platform.
Yeah, essentially. Yep.
Right?
And it's very cool. It's very innovative. And so I used to have a blog for many years, but I don't anymore. And now I only write on Substack. And so it's kind of like a newsletter, but it's also it kind of is like my own little blog there. I have a publication there called One Tired Mother. And so that's
right. Okay.
I got it from I saw a shirt in the thrift store that said One Tired Mother. And I said, oh, that's the name. That's the name of something for me in the future.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what I do so far. It's been hard to.
Yeah. Do you have a podcast as well?
I don't have a podcast, but I do sometimes podcast on Substack. I can podcast in my publication. So, I don't say I have a podcast because I don't record regularly, but sometimes I do podcasts in my Substack.
So sometimes that your Substack can be audio or written.
Yep, exactly. Sometimes I do only a podcast and I also do voiceovers for my posts. You know, I will read them sometimes so people can listen. It mostly just depends on how much time I have. But it's been such a good thing. I'm so glad I pushed through and continued to dedicate time to getting my ideas on paper or on Instagram or whatever through the mothering years, because it can be hard to do that because it kind of feels like, what am I doing? You know, I'm supposed to be focusing on my kids and we all know there's enough work with the kids in the house that you could be doing that all of your waking hours. And sometimes
you'll never be done. So let's just, you know, let's make sure we have time for rest, recreation.
Yes.
You know,
exactly. But that was very hard for me because I'm an achiever. I was like, if I'm going to be a homemaker, I'm going to be really good at it. I'm going to be the best homemaker. I'm going to be a really good mom, you know? So it took me some years. I had been writing my entire motherhood career, but it took me some years to feel good about that. Like I always did it because it like filled me up. But my husband would be like, why are you doing that? You're trying to do too much, you know? And I would be like, oh, you're right. Maybe, you know, when the kids get older, then I can write, you know,
But I think it helps you grow. I really do.
It does.
It helps you keep your ideals really clear.
Yes. I love what you said about that. Yeah. And I had never really thought about it like that, but and it's just so life-giving for me. Like, and I've realized in recent years too, like God made me like this. Like God made me the person that I am. And so to try to fit into this like mold where I'm not using my gifts is not really honoring to God either.
Yeah. And I mean, if you can, I mean, sometimes even things like have creating more time to do the things you want you to do by hiring somebody to come in and help with the housework.
I do that.
You know, you can see your way to do that, right? Yes. Exactly. Yes. And we should never feel like we're second class housewives because we do that.
I agree.
Because we have other things that we're interested in.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. But there's not really a model for that. You know, that's kind of, you have to be a bit of a rebel to do because, you know, the model is kind of like stay at home mom, working mom. And it's kind of like, if you're at home, there's kind of these beliefs of like, oh, you're so lucky you get to be at home. It must be such luxury. Yeah. You can afford that. And so I feel like, at least for me, it made me feel like, even though we were living on one income, which, you know, so it's not luxurious, but it made me feel like, well, can I spend money on that? And I was like, well, there's a lot of mental blocks to work through. And this goes back to like some of the things that I write about, like there's all these messages about what it means to be at home and what it means to, and it's like, a lot of them are, they're not really true. And you got to kind of be a rebellious thinker, I feel like, to do something like hire a cleaner as an at-home mom. Yeah. I think a lot of people would be like, what do you mean? You're at home. Why would you hire a cleaner?
Why would you hire a cleaner? You know, it's interesting because I just was, I interviewed Julie Bogart in that.
Oh, I love
her.
She's
a great writer lady. Yeah, she's great. She was fantastic. Her and I really hit it off. And I think I'd like to do more with her because I don't know. We're kind of the same people.
You
are, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You have the same energy.
And she said, she had done a little, you know, Instagram live or something. And she said, you know, you've chosen a career path, right? As a homeschooler. And I've always referred to that. My career as homeschooler, right? My career, you know, I homeschooled for 32 years. I just finished. Wow. That's a career, man.
Yes, absolutely.
But it was really neat to hear somebody else say, you know, you've chosen a career.
Yes.
If you decide to contract out some of your housework, if you decide to contract out, you know, whatever, some lessons, you know, math lessons or whatever, that's fine. Yeah. Right? You do what you love, what you do. You've chosen a big chunk of your life that you've dedicated to this, right? And you don't have to feel bad about where you get support and help.
Yeah.
Right?
Totally. I think part of it is like this idea, and at least it was this way for me, that like, I really thought being at home would be easy. I really thought it would be easy. And I think that was like my feminist programming, you know, because you know, the work of the home, it's not really much, right? It's kind of like this denigration of the work and like, it's can't possibly be that hard. I mean, anybody can do it.
Add a few kids in the mix.
No, exactly. But even that, you know, like, I was shocked at how hard it felt. And I was shocked at how much work like cooking every day is, for example.
Yeah.
I was floored at that. I could not believe it. And so, you know, it's work, you know, so I always push back against, you know, like we need to stop saying working moms, like all mothers work, all mothers work,
exactly.
You know,
it's work. I know. It's like the word extended breastfeeding has always really bugged me because it's like, no, it's just normal breastfeeding.
Yeah, totally.
It's just normal.
And these terms, and, you know, but these terms like impact our consciousness around things, right? And so it's like, I really try to push back against certain language that I find problematic about motherhood and working mother is one of them. Anyway.
Okay. On that note, this is the Instagram post that just you posted recently that kind of popped out at me that was really great. And it said, have you surrendered to motherhood? Wow. Something along the lines, have you surrendered to motherhood? Yeah. This is something I've talked about a lot over the years because it's so much easier once you surrender to it.
It is.
Right?
Yeah.
It's so much easier to just, and maybe you coming in and kind of, you know, sort of starting a little bit older and, you know, whatnot, having kids, maybe you were, your brain was in a place where the surrendering happened more easily. I don't know.
Well,
you know, I don't know.
I would say it took some years. It took some years, but probably a little bit. You're probably right to some extent.
Yeah. And you knowing what you want out of life or whatever, because I know that can often take 2, 3, 4 kids before, you know, and I think some people don't ever surrender, but I think when you have a big family that you often sort of get to a place where you think, you know what, this is my life.
Yes.
This is what I do. And my husband and I used to talk about this because he said, you know, when our kids are grown up, like our life is so clearly defined right now. We have to raise kids. We have to educate them. We have to feed them well. We have to give them a full life. You know, there's so much defined in what we do. But when they start to grow up, you're not quite as sure as like where you offer your sacrifices, where you, you know, you have to rethink that. And in fact, you get to a point, I did anyway, got to a point where I felt a little bit like a teenager again. Mm. Like, Oh, not that I always had hobbies and I always had things that I loved to do, but it was more like, okay, where do I fit now? Like, because they need to be their own people.
Yeah.
And so I've done this for so long that I just have to kind of get my feet under me a little bit. Right.
Yeah.
Our role was so clearly defined.
Yeah.
Instead of battling against that, surrender. So what I was kind of hoping from you is maybe we could talk about that for a moment in light of what is the difference between surrendering and giving up? Because I think that sometimes those phrases can get blurred in our own minds as moms. And so what do we mean by surrender? What do we mean by giving up? How are the two different?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I put something in the caption.
Okay.
I'm just going to pull it up here because I think it will be more articulate than I can be.
Sure.
I wrote, surrendering to motherhood doesn't mean that it's a battle between you and your children and you're giving up. Not at all. It just means that you're letting go of a rigid way of thinking, the way you wish things were, the way you think things should or need to be, the need for control, the desire for predictability. You're looking at what is the beautiful souls in front of you and what they need. And you're saying, okay, this work is important. How can I figure this out? What could I learn from this? So
beautiful.
So to me, it's just, it's not at all about giving up. It's about seeing motherhood as something that can teach you instead of fighting it. It's softening and being like, okay, what do I need to learn here? How do I need to grow? What is there for me in this experience? You know, instead of seeing it as something you need to kind of as an adversary almost.
Well, and I think we often end up there, right?
Yeah.
That we're, you know, okay, I'm kind of like, this is not what I imagined.
Yeah.
I thought, I was going to be really good at this. You know, my kids would always behave because I was going to be so good at it. Right? Right?
Yes, exactly.
But when we soften like that, I think that it really does have a big impact. And then there's sort of a macro scale that you're putting beautiful words to, kind of this macro scale is like, how can I learn from this? How can I grow from this? Mm-hmm. You know, what does this thing of motherhood have to teach me? Mm-hmm. And then there's a micro scale, of course, too. Mm-hmm. How do I respond when my kid's being sassy, when my kid's, you know, dumping stuff all over the floor, when my kid's not going to bed when I ask them to, when my kid's whatever, how do I respond to that? And even how can I even grow in this moment too? Right.
100%. And to me, it feels very, very related to just like surrendering in your spiritual life, you know, trusting that there is something that's for your good here, even if it feels really hard, trusting God that whatever's happening is for your good. It feels the same kind of to me, you know, that you're trusting that there is something for your growth, for your, you know, spiritual benefit here.
Yeah, exactly. So how would you say, what might be the process or the prayer or the thought patterns that you might have when you're trying to, I think this is important because I have so many young moms who listen, that when you're, how do you actively, in a sense, surrender, right? I realize surrender is kind of an act of passivity, but in a sense, what do you do to help yourself surrender into motherhood?
That's a great question. I think the answer, honestly, because we human beings are so stubborn, and those of us who are smart, I think in particular, I imagine your audience is, you know, full of intelligent young women.
We think we
can control things because we're smart and we're capable. And of course we are. And so we think, okay, I'm going to do this really well. I don't know that there's, and I could be wrong, I haven't thought deeply about this, but I don't know that there's another way other than what you said, just having multiple children. Like, they will teach you. Mm-hmm. It will just teach you. You have way less control than you think. The things that matter, that you thought mattered, don't matter. And these other things over here that are more invisible and more like only your child and you will know about, those are the things that matter. Yeah. You know, I just think be open to learning from the experience of motherhood. It's a posture of openness and not I know what's best and I'm going to do it this way and this and this. It's okay to have some of that. Mm-hmm. I had tons of that energy as a first time mom because of who I am as a person. Yeah. I think it's okay. But I think if you can try to be intentional with your motherhood, but kind of have open hands, like a posture of open hands, like I also am willing to learn. I'm also willing to let my child in front of me teach me, because that's another thing, right? It's like we have our firstborn and we're like, oh, we're such good parents. Like, look at our firstborn. Look at us. I mean, how good are we, right? and then, you know, for most of us, the second child comes along and then you learn, wow, that actually wasn't us. That was just our child's temperament for the most part. Mm-hmm. and your second born teaches you too, like what worked for the first kid. Like, I actually need something different. And so can you hear me? Can you see me as different from my sibling and needing something else? And so just being, again, having that willing to learn spirit and willing to that openness of like, okay, I don't actually have the answers. Let me kind of see what's what here. And let me, I don't know. Yeah, that's my best answer, I think.
Sort of looking around. Looking around at families that you appreciate and families that are doing things and that, you know, you feel like the kids look, you know, happy or the family looks cohesive or whatever. And nobody's like that all the time. Really, really hard. I think really needs to be said over and over and over again. You know, the Instagram families that look perfect, they're not perfect. And it's frustrating, I think, too. If I'm following somebody who gives me that vibe, I just unfollow because I just think, you know what? Like, let's be honest, because this isn't easy.
No.
Right. And let's talk about what is hard. And when I say isn't, I'm not talking about homeschooling or home birth or any of those things. I'm just talking about raising humans. It's not supposed to be easy.
And I think it is really difficult. I've tried to explain this to my mother. You know, 30 years ago, no one saw what anyone else was doing ever. And now mothers can see how everyone else is mothering. And of course they're just seeing the things that, you know, people want you to see, but you have all these windows into how other people are doing it constantly. And that is, that makes
filtered
it,
windows.
filtered windows. Only what people want you to see. Mm-hmm. And that makes it really hard. Even if you try actively to not compare, if you are looking at a Instagram story of someone out walking, you know, by a stream, I still catch myself being like, oh, like we didn't go outside today. Or like, you know, it's like the comparison. It happens just naturally when you have windows, these weird little windows into other people's lives. And I think people really need to watch their, I say this as someone who has an account on Instagram, but you really need to watch your social media use. And I don't know. It's a complex topic because also social media connects people. Yeah. It connected you and I. Exactly. I mean, there's so many amazing things, but especially when you're in those vulnerable years of early motherhood, I just think it can make it a lot harder than it already is. Don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think really important that if somebody kind of just gives you that, like, okay, this is making me feel inadequate, or this is just unfollow, don't follow, you know.
But I think sometimes hard to feel into the inadequacy because sometimes it feels inspirational at first, right? And you don't even know that it's making you feel inadequate. It's like, and as an ambitious mother, you feel, I want to be a really good mother. So I'm getting these ideas. This is what I felt for a long time when I followed accounts like that. I'm getting ideas. Yeah. It's so amazing that I can see all these different ideas. And then at some point I just unfollowed all of those accounts because just started following writers and people who talked about the spiritual life, because I was like, I don't need a million ideas. I already have 75,000 screenshots that I will never implement. You know, it's like, we don't need.
Why did I take that?
It's too much. And it does. It just makes you feel inadequate after. And so, it's tricky. So I think being mindful.
And not that, you know, that some, I mean, people are sharing a part of their life that they feel strongly about or whatever, and that's great, but it is I think we have to be watchful about how things are affecting us. And if somebody's consistently saying something that makes you just feel like Let's not do that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for all of this. I really, really appreciate your openness and your honesty. And I would really encourage people to have a look at your Instagram in particular. Substack I went on a little bit, but not much, but I your Instagram is just, I felt like, encouraging, positive, to just be the person that we need to be, not to be the person that Amber needs us to be.
For sure.
Right. And that matters, right. That makes a big difference. And I think that, I think that can be a really valuable, thing for, but now I want to go, now that I know you're a writer, now I want to go and read some Substack.
Yeah. Thanks. I've just gotten into a good rhythm in the last couple of months of publishing twice a week. I'm going to do it. I'm sharing some of my older stuff because I took down my old little blog. And so I'm sharing some old pieces, and I'm finally starting to publish regularly, which feels really good. And I'm trying to spend less time on Instagram, even though I like creating on Instagram. Yeah. It can be, as you know, very, you know, oh, I posted something. Okay, let me check. Has anybody commented? And, you know, it can be very,
I
don't want to be on my phone more. I want to be looking at my kids' faces, you know? So
exactly.
Yeah. But thank you. Thank you for having me. And I want to get to know you more. We need to talk more. I need to glean some wisdom for my homeschooling starting this fall.
Oh yeah, we can absolutely do that. Well, what I've been doing recently is probably in the last, 6 or 8 months, is if somebody submits, because I started off with the podcast, people submitted questions to me, right? And then my co-hosts would bring the questions and we would talk about those particular questions because I speak, you know, pretty well off the cuff, right? After this many years, Anne, right? You know what you want, you know what you like. And that's been fantastic. And it's just so great to get to know people and what kind of questions they have and whatnot. But recently, when somebody submits questions, I'll ask them, would you like to bring these in person? And some people say, oh, no, absolutely not. And some people say, yeah, I'd love that. And that's been super fun because, so if you want to do this again and you have, you know, 3 or 4 questions that you think, okay, these are, you know, because I guarantee it, if you have questions, somebody else has them and it's worth bringing to the show.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. And especially, you know, coming in, I'm assuming you're taking your kids out of school.
I have a, taking them out there in the local Catholic school now. And, and I've wanted to homeschool. It just hasn't felt, doable, for various reasons. Right. And this year it just, things have kind of aligned and it has just felt right. And so I've wanted to homeschool for years. My main concern is my sanity.
That's a good concern.
This is what I hear. I'm not at all concerned about being able to teach my kids. And, I just, you know, it's a lot being with your kids all the time. And so halfway through the year next year, as I'm drowning. No, I'm just kidding. I won't be drowning. It'll be great. I'll come with some specific homeschooling questions. I would love to do that if you have the space.
That would be so fun. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like we could have a lot to talk about. By the way, maybe a couple months ago, I did a live, a retreat, kind of a mini retreat for Catholic moms in my area. Sorry. And the topic was keeping your head above water. Right. And I actually ended up sort of just sticking my phone on the counter in my living room and videoing myself. Well, maybe I can put it up on YouTube if it works out or whatever. So the quality is not awesome, but I felt like it was a really good talk and really good questions came out of it. So it's on my YouTube channel. It'll be the most recent thing I posted. I don't post that much on there, but, it's called Keeping Your Head Above Water. And I just felt like I'm putting it out there so my listeners know that, but I just felt like it was one of those things that when we're kind of drowning and all the moms there, you know, kind of are explaining sort of how they're feeling. And it's not homeschooling problems really. It's mom problems, right?
Yeah.
Family problems, family challenges. And so anyway, that might be a fun thing to,
is your YouTube channel just called Make Joy Normal?
It's just Bonnie Landry. I have a homeschool workshop on there that, that I did. I used to do a live workshop all the time. And then it got to a point where I couldn't be in all the places I needed to be to do the workshop. So I had it professionally videoed. This is 7 years ago or something. And that was really great. And so it was a product people could buy, you know, and it was a lot less expensive than bringing you in to, you know, speak at your thing. But at the beginning of the pandemic, I put it up on YouTube just free as a free resource, because I felt like so many people were homeschooling and so many people were needing support, because I want to support people that homeschooling can be really cozy and really lovely. And this is a way that you can approach homeschooling to attain, you know, when your ideal is the relationship first, yes, right? Yes, relationship first. True. And that's how you keep it cozy. So anyway, so that's one of my playlists and it's called Homeschooling with Joy, I think.
I will check that out. I'm not a big user of YouTube for some reason. I'm not really in that space, but I will go try to check it out. I know there's tons of good stuff there, but I'm not really into, I don't know.
Yeah. Spend a lot of time. Well, you know, I just realized, I remembered that maybe a year ago, I actually took the audio from those workshops. It's in four parts because it's kind of an all-day workshop. I took the audio and put it on my podcast. Cool. So I just, you know, once I found out I could do that, I thought, oh, because lots of people would prefer, because you don't need to be looking at me, right?
Yeah.
But so that's on there as well if you're interested. But I should probably wrap up here and let you get back to your kids. So God bless. And I'm so happy to meet you.
We'll be in touch. Thank you.
Okay. Bye. Take care.